Hey, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And this is the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast that we do twice a week because we like to stab ground cloth.
Mm-hmm. All the time, as much as possible.
Every minute we get a chance to do it. Yep.
Yes.
All right, so obviously no Stitch Hour tonight because we're doing this. And Sunday's show is Ann Beck.
Yes, and go, you need to follow her on Instagram because her stuff, I've been drooling on it for years on my photo, drooling on my phone.
Yeah, that's some special embroidery there.
Very nice.
Yeah, and then her first career was costume designer for the San Francisco Ballet. Then she did top level Brian Boitano type figure skating costumes.
Right.
Yeah. Right. You know, we flipped that around because normally we try to do things chronologically, but then we talked about her embroidery because I knew if we did the costume part, we'd run out of time. So we talked about the embroidery, and then we ran out of time for the costume part because that could have been another hour. Oh, man.
Yes. Because we barely touched that. But her embroidery is so gorgeous. Oh. It's just beautiful stuff.
That's why I flipped it around because I wanted to make sure we talked about her embroidery as much as possible because it's stunning. It's beautiful.
Right. Very creative. Very creative stuff. Oh.
And the part that I loved is in talking to her and talking about sources for different kinds of threads and cloth, the knowledge she has from her costume making career is mind-blowing. Because you could just tell that you need that kind of thread? Well, I know somebody somewhere in the world that I can get in touch with and get it. And it was
Or trims or, just things that, she needed for costumes, amazing beads, buttons.
I know. Yeah.
Sequins.
Yeah.
She maybe dig through my stash.
You could tell she knew where beads were anywhere in the world, whatever you want. Yeah. That was pretty special. So that's Sunday. And then this past Sunday, now we talked with Krista West about her book. And yes, Everyday Folk is her book. Order her book.
It's beautifully laid out. It's great information in there.
Yep. But it's such a functional book for people and not just for cross stitch. A lot of those patterns you could do in needlepoint, you could obviously do them in embroidery, but there's just so much in there.
How she helps you figure out how you want to make a table runner. She gives you how to figure out how much fabric you need, how to do a repeating design. Yeah. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's important stuff. I don't know. I think it's
really
great.
Excellent. Yep. Order her book. And it's $25 or what? $29 from her, with the shipping, I think it was.
Right.
But most books are $40, $50, $60. This has so much value. I think that's the other part. It's such a value for $30. So much to it. Yeah. It's a good book.
And then she did say if you're out of the States, get it via Amazon.
Yeah.
Let Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you're in the States, don't do it through Amazon.
No, get it from her. Just get it from her.
Yeah.
She'll sign it for you.
Right.
With her own handwriting.
That was so funny that a lady thought she was computer printing the signing because her printing is so good. Membership is so good. I could never pull that off.
No, you would know my scrawl anywhere.
Yeah.
That's not legible.
Right. And no computer can regenerate it. No. Not happening.
No.
But that was funny, yeah. So do that. And then we're recording on Monday. And so we had our first Tour de Broderie Femme for the Tour de France, the Women's Tour de France. And
they were done. They were done before we even got on.
They finished almost an hour before we got on. They were done.
It was crazy.
Yeah, short thing. So anyway, we're doing every week or every day now, all the way through Sunday, the 18th. So at 10:30 Eastern time, we're doing the thing. Jessica Grimm, I think, is going to be able to join us for everyone. Beth and Jennifer and Cindy will drop in as they can through the week. But so, we were on an hour. If you hadn't had to go do something else, we'd have kept going.
I know. We were having fun.
Yeah.
It's like we were just enjoying our conversation, stitching and
learning stuff. Yeah. So if the race ends before, because the women are different from the men, it's just a different thing. They don't go as far. The distance isn't as far. Tuesday, they're doing two stages in one day. It's just weird. So even if you follow the races and you see that it ends before we start, we're still going to do a show. This morning was going to be a half hour that ended up being an hour that Beth stopped us. Like, we got other things to do.
I got to do some stuff. I have bread to pop in the oven. It's going to overflow my pans.
Yeah. It was a good thing. It was a good thing you said something, because I had a bunch of work to do for the magazine. And so I said, I thought, all right, a half hour, we'll do a half hour. And then I got to get to work. And if you hadn't said something, we'd have kept going. And then I'd have been mad at myself for not watching the clock. So,
And buried in work, buried.
Yeah. So join us 10:30 Eastern, every day through Sunday, the 18th, because we're going to do this racing thing and enjoy that. So there we go. Let's see. You're cooking along on your dawn to dusk thing. Man, you're seeing the end. I think you've reached that point, haven't you?
Yeah, I've reached the point.
So you're going to drive it through, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and I'm working. I think I've got four little motifs left to do. And for those who go look at Texture Treasure, I don't know, Karen
Dudzinski. Texture treasures.
That's her design. It's her design, but I changed the colors to reds and grays because I love it. But so the problem is going to be, I know the putting the beads on is going to be the killer because it's so many beads. Every little, I should show you. Ooh, sorry for the noise. So in the brocade, I've got black squares, but in the intersections, I think in these little intersections are beads in every single little intersection.
Yeah. Yep.
I think I need to start that, or it'll end up not being done.
Not beaded. Yeah. Okay. Right. So is that something? Because you said all along, do the brocade as you go, or you'll never do it.
Right.
But should you have done the beads, or can't you do the beads because you keep snagging them?
I would keep snagging them. But now I know I can start doing the beads I haven't put the beads in some of the motifs yet either. So I'm going to go put those back in, and then I'll start just in one corner and I'll be fine. And I'll just start beading it, because the bottom ones I can't do because it'll be too close, but the ones up top will be fine. Even though I've got a border to put on it, I think it'll still be okay. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I hate to wait till the end, because then it would be killer. And then you wouldn't add them. And I think it needs the beads, because I've debated, and I've got these silver gray ones to put on. They're Delica transparent luster, and I think they'll work.
Oh, they're gonna add barely that extra. They're gonna add
just
that
a little
extra,
gray.
Yeah. They're going to add that extra little something. Yeah. You got to.
Tedious work though.
Yeah.
So it'll be my carrot to work on another piece. I'll say, okay, you have to put a length of thread in, and then you can stop and go work on something else. Cause the other problem is it's on the black, and it's very hard for me to see. So if I don't if I'm tired, my eyes hurt, I can't touch it. It just sits. I can't see them. I can't see it.
Yeah.
And I know the white underneath on your lap, the lightest, or I'd like, no, sometimes you just need to be awake.
We know all the tricks. We know all the tricks. Yeah. Just doing it. Yeah.
Right.
But now,
right.
So you've selected for the border. We were talking this morning on the Tour de Broderie show about the border. And so now mm-hmm. you've selected some threads. So Wednesday morning on the Tour de Broderie, we'll look at those threads and right. get some input from the audience and from Jessica on.
Right.
But we were talking before we started recording about how you almost are going to have to stitch them to really
right.
tell.
Yeah. Because, and I was even thinking that I'm going to change the border. I know it's probably not going to be gray. It's going to be a red or a darker shade of gray. And I think I'm going to lay red underneath because it has padding. It's a padded satin stitch, which I love padded satin stitch. I love doing padded. So because you get to lay the threads, it's just relaxing.
Right.
But once I find that color, that'll go. That'll go fast. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's padded satin is fun because you get to lay threads and it's very easy laying. It's a very easy thread laying job, but also it just looks so cool.
Yeah, it looks nice. It just looks nice once you're done. So but this is a piece. I'm bound and determined to get it finished this year.
Oh, I could smell here. It was actually a couple weeks ago. I just kind of got that sense that you saw the end, like the home stretch is coming up here and you're driving it in. Yeah.
Right. Once I finish that brocade now, but we'll see if the beads do me in. I think that's going to be something I'm just going to have to force myself to sit down and work on. But you need it. It needs it. Yeah. It needs the beads. It'll make a huge difference.
I think once you get an area of beads in, it's going to be so cool that you'll just.
I won't have it. It'll have to go. It'll just have to keep going on it.
Because that's going to be cool. Oh, man.
Yeah. And it's been fun. And I have to say, it's been a fun pattern to change the colors.
Yeah.
Because her colorways are gorgeous. And she did a blue one for you. I just pulled a huge, I should send you a photo of the mess of threads that I pulled for this.
Yeah.
And because it's two boxes, little shoe boxes full, and it's overflowing. It's like, I really don't need all these colors. At least I didn't think I did until I decided to, maybe I should do this with the border.
Yeah.
And then I had to dig through all the threads to see if I had one. And
Well, it's working out great. It really looks nice.
Well, and you've seen Mary Corbett when she pulled colors. She pulled colors for a piece, I think, last week. Or a week before, and she had all, and I was like, I feel so much better. Mary Corbett does the same thing. She pulls all the threads.
Get them all out,
But then I think she puts hers away sooner than I put mine away. I wait till I'm at the end of the project. I think she knows when she starts that she's not going to use some and puts them away.
Yeah.
Not me.
Yeah, well, she's had some famous episodes in the past where she's had to take 2 or 3 days to regain some use of her space, so.
Yeah. It's about there here. So I'm like, okay, I was even thinking that the other day. I was like, okay, why don't you just pull the ones that you know you're using and put the rest away?
Yeah. But then you never know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Something doesn't work out, and then you got to go get the rest of them. Yeah. It's like you need a staging area, an off-site staging area, like in the basement, a table. These were the options that were rejected, and they stay there till you're sure.
And that's what these boxes are. They're the ones I pulled originally, thinking, maybe this thread will work. Maybe I can use it. Maybe this color will work. And some of them I know don't work, so I should put those away because they just never panned out. But.
Yeah. Well, it looks pretty cool. It's very nice. It's going to be an impressive piece.
Thank you.
Well, the thing is, it's impressive. Unfinished.
Right.
And so when it's done, it's just going to be over the top.
And I love looking at other people's that they've gone and finished in different colorways. They're just gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
Thank you.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, here's the question of the day. You have pieces. I have pieces hanging around the house. You have pieces hanging around the house, and people interested in your needlework who are not stitchers.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you show them?
It was interesting. The other day, someone asked me to ask me about my podcast. They say, well, you do a podcast. I said, yeah, I do a podcast on stitching. Oh, I stitch. I quilt. Mm. And I'm like, good. That's good. It's just not the same thing. And it was kind of like this, they were interested, but they didn't know what I was talking about. And I think it's the same thing when you show someone, yeah, they're kind of interested in your needlework.
Yeah.
But then the eyes, you know, you're going into, I use this fabric, I use this thread, I pulled, it was this design, but I changed it up. And they're like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, eyes glaze over.
Yeah, yeah, the nodding of the head.
Yeah, the auto nodding. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, I'm interested. Can we get out of here? Yeah.
Yeah. It's when I talk to my siblings about it. I'm talking to my sisters and I'm like, oh, and I'm working on this piece and it's really cool. And they're like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good for you, Beth. Beth and her little threads. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't send it to me when you're done. That's the other response I get. I don't want it.
Well, it's kind of a thing because I think sometimes we're our own worst enemies because it's very easy for us to lapse into that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Where you start talking about, oh, and I changed the threads here, and it's this stitch, and look how this stitch works, and it's so cool. You want to share that with people who couldn't care less.
Right, right.
You know?
They just look at you like, so what?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And then you get the questions, how long did it take you?
I don't know. I don't keep track. Right. I do have friends that do keep track of their stitching time, but I'm not one of them.
I don't either. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no. it's kind of a thing that's too bad because if somebody comes to your house and they see a piece, you know, come in the door, they see a piece, ooh, that's pretty. And then you want to give them a tour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Come and see my work. Mm-hmm. But don't, because they aren't that interested.
No. No, and I have I have Gay Ann Rogers hearts. All the ones I finished are on a tree, a hat tree in my living room. And so people see them when they walk in and out. And especially the one that always attracts them is Elizabeth the First, that heart, because it's stunning. It's got pearl beads in the bodice. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful design. And it always stops people and they look at it. But you know, you want to say, oh, and I've got more. I've got Elizabeth stitched. Uh-huh. But you know, if I brought out Elizabeth, they'd be like, why do you have Elizabeth on a box? You know, why did you stitch that? Is the question I've gotten too. It's like, why have you done that? It's like, because it was a challenge. It was interesting. It was fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know not. It's like, yeah, they say, oh, this is really pretty. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Because you know, I know you're not a stitcher.
Right. That's where it has to stop. But that's where you have to discipline yourself and stop there. Say thank you and move on to whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because they really don't care.
Nope. And that's the hardest part because you want to share this thing that you're excited about every day.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing, in your case, that is filling your basement.
That's right. It is. It's filling my basement. It's something I have a passion for, and I'd love to get you addicted to it too. But people aren't. They look at it and they're like, yeah. Or they're like, oh, I used to do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't have time anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, or I can't see it. You know, and even if you say, well, and I used to tell people, oh, you know, there's magnifiers, you know, there's the patterns are different. It's no longer those geese.
Yeah.
Patterns, you know, it's all changed. You know, it's very, you know, there's all sorts of new stuff. I used to say things like that to people. And then I realized, no, it didn't. Yeah. And just like, you don't have time anymore. That's okay. You can't see. Well, if you ever want to learn something, you know, let me know and I'll loan you glasses. We can get readers. You can get magnifiers. You know, but let me know. Let me know if you're ever interested. And I rarely, if ever, get.
Right. You won't hear from them. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. The 40 count linen. You know, this is stitched on 40 count linen with silk. Oh, I could never do that. Okay, then. What? Why am I? Just stop. You know, the little voice in your head. Just stop. Because.
Just stop.
I could never do that. Oh, I couldn't do those stitches. I did cross stitch once.
Right.
You know, precious moments. Yeah.
Right, right.
Just stop. Just stop and right. say, well, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, I think people realize that, don't realize there's other stuff out there and they're not willing to try, or they've not interesting. We found something, moved on to something else.
We just got to
close our mouths and say, okay, no,
put a cork
in it. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to move on.
Thinking about this, I remember, when I was directing handbell choirs, and people would come up after a service and say, oh, that was so beautiful. You know, or it was gorgeous music. Thank you. Whatever. And people would, thank you, but I made a mistake here, or, oh, we didn't play. Mm-hmm. And I had to say, you know, just tell them thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Just say, thanks. Mm-hmm. Glad you enjoyed it. You know, and don't even get into what techniques we use or whether it was a hard piece. Because again, no care. Don't care.
No.
Just say, thank you. Glad you enjoyed it. And move on. Yeah. Yep.
Because it's the same thing. They don't realize, they're not really interested in the technique that it takes to do handbells.
Right.
They just enjoyed the music and moved on.
Yep. Needlework. Yep. Yep. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
it
you.
Was, it, there's 58 Jessicas in this piece, and I did them all really well, and they're different shapes, and it, No, just don't. Yeah.
No. But I kind of wonder, and I know you're going to talk to next week. We're going to have Robin and
Cindy.
Yes. Rain Freezer on the live show is the plan to show their the things they showed at the fair. And then they go and stitch at the fair. So I'm curious to see if people come up to them and are just merely being polite, or are generally curious about their work.
Ah.
Because originally, 34 years ago, that's how I joined EGA. EGA had a booth set up at the St. Paul, and I think they still do, up at the Minnesota State Fair, demonstrated.
Uh-huh.
I looked at what they were doing, and I was like, I need to know who you are and what you're doing and get me to a meeting.
And
I joined that year. It was fantastic. And that's how I met EGA, is at a state fair with people demonstrating.
Yeah.
But so, you know, maybe you only get one or two people, but maybe those one or two people are the people, are your tribe.
Right. Yeah, well, and that's a good one, because at the state fair, as I recall from Cindy talking in the past, they have a building that they're in. So you intentionally have to go to that building and go in to look at it, and then they're there.
Right.
So that's we got to find out. You know, we got to find out. Is it just passing interest, being nice, Midwest polite? I believe is how a comedian. Talks about it. Midwest polite. You know, are they doing that, or are they genuinely interested and maybe you might hook one? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be nice to know. That would be nice to know. Even if it's just one, you just get one person that's interested in it.
And that's a good question. As stitchers, are we supposed to do the what would Jesus do thing? Are we supposed to spread the word, convert the people.
Well, you know, I think there's young people doing crafts, and it's a very isolated thing. We stitch by ourselves, right? You don't really stitch with other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, to get the younger people to say, hey, you know, we do other things too. There's more than just cross stitch, and there's other stitches, and, you know, the more you know, the more dangerous we can be. The more stash you can build.
Right. Okay, well, we got to make sure we ask that next Wednesday of Cindy and Robin, because now they've done it several years, and they, I think Cindy said they go on the last day of the thing and stitch, but then they also stitch in the library, but you do that too, right? I mean, you guys stitch in
public. We used to do it. We haven't done it in a while. Yeah. And then we have one member who goes to stitches at the county fair. Mm-hmm. But I don't think so far she hasn't, there's not been a lot of interest, but, and that's getting us, that county fair is getting less and less needlework, but members of our guild aren't putting things in either.
Yeah.
So it's kind of becoming a cycle there. I know we've been asked to stitch at the local quilt show by a member of the quilt guild. Uh-huh. They've asked us to put on a demonstration for an hour. And so that's drawn a lot of interest, because I think that there are a lot. We do get inquiries from that quilt guild for people wanting to learn embroidery stitches, because they're doing wool applique or they're doing art quilts and they need to know stitches. So that's kind of a draw there.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. That'll be interesting because they get a huge amount of people going through that quilt show, I do believe, because it's known locally. They're a big quilt group. And they get vendors. It's a big deal. I've never been, so it'll be fun if I can manage to swing over there and do the show. But
well, I would think you'd see a lot of people, because quilting in the Midwest is kind of a ongoing thing. So
right.
Yeah, you can find quilt shops everywhere. So that's
right. But it'll be interesting to see if we get some crossover there, from people.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and that's the thing for quilters too, is there's embellishment of their quilts. So, you know, there's a there's enough of a crossover there that there would be, I would think, some interest, That'll be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, it will be. It will be.
Yep.
I'm glad they reached out to us.
Yeah, that's cool. Our oldest grandson, Cooper, asked me the other day. I was really surprised. Grandpa, will you teach me how to sew? Because to him, it's sewing, you know. And yeah, sure. Why? Yeah, happy to. Because I did, when he was in kindergarten or first grade. Yeah, he's going into third grade, so it must have been first grade. They would have spelling words every week. So one week, we were supposed to go over the spelling words with him. And it was just a handful. And I got out a piece of cloth and some thread and a needle and had him stitch the spelling words. Just back stitch, just running stitch, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And stitched and then he took that to school to show how he had practiced. And the teacher took a picture and put it in the weekly newsletter. This is how Cooper practices his spelling words. So it was fun, you know. I mean, it was a one-time thing. I mean, it was way more hassle. We could have practiced the spelling words in a fraction of the time. But he had fun doing it. Well, now, here a couple years later, can you show me how? So, sure.
Yeah. What's he interested in stitching? Did he say, or just, you don't know?
He doesn't know. I don't know, and he doesn't know. But I got to find something that he can handle, and that might be a semi interest to him. So
right.
I'll find something.
Right. You'll find something. Yeah. You got to find something that's a bug. I mean, is he a bug, or he's not the sports one? He's
That's Connor. That's
Connor
Beasy. I just get a picture of a football, he'd be fine.
No,
Cooper's going to be a different one. He's into this Minecrafting.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's all he talks about, and all he does. So, if I could find a free Minecraft pattern that he could cross stitch.
I'm sure there's some out there. There's got to be something out there.
Something illegally procured, and then I'll illegally procure it. And
a little pattern for the boy.
But that if I can find something like that, then I'll have him locked right in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But you know, it was just that spelling thing. And it was, we had a couple hours to kill, you know, hey, let's try this, something different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good hand-eye coordination. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, he enjoyed it. You did a good job. And it was, I mean, it was, I had him pencil it out, you know, on the cloth, and then stitch over the pencil lines. And
Why not?
So basically we are not going to give tours of our houses, of RDM work in our houses. Yeah.
No, no.
Or
tell people.
We do, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I hear you stitch. Yeah. I stitch. Well, I quilt. Good. Yes. And it's similar, but it's not exactly the same.
Yeah.
But there is crossover, but.
Right. Yeah. There's a thread and a needle involved. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. not worth it.
No.
So, all right. The, I like this thing you sent from the Textile Artist Newsletter.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much in this. All right. So it's the August 12th Textile Artist Newsletter, which I need to subscribe to if they run stuff like that, like this. So the thing they have, seeking precisely the right supplies for a project can become a distraction, maybe even an obsession. And your creativity can be stifled from the word go if your next piece of textile art relies entirely on exactly the right weight of linen prescribed by a textile artist you admire, the precise shade of blue thread you envisaged for a project. I think it should be envisioned, but we're going to let them go on that. And an ultra-specialized type of needle mentioned by a stitch tutor.
Yes. Okay. We do that. I was doing it the other day. I have there's a sampler, and I'm like, oh, you know, I don't know if I should start this. I have the whole kit, but, oh, maybe I should change it. You know, it's this idea that, or I heard someone talk about it. You know, they didn't have exactly the color of fabric that went with the sampler that was prescribed on the back. I was like, so change it. Make it your own.
Yep.
It's easy to get sucked in.
Yep. And how many people have we seen online looking for this particular thread? You know, I have an old project and they're calling for this thread. Does somebody have it? Yet there's probably 10 substitutes for it that would work just as well.
Right. Yeah. And we're not talking about people like you in the middle of a project and you need to find a match. That's a different right. Right. We're talking about starting something new, or people saying, I've heard people say they'll look at the cover image of a project and then they'll buy a kit with the prescribed threads, but it doesn't look like the picture on the front. And that's why they bought it. It's like, well, so change it, make it look like the picture on the front. If that's really what you want to stitch, you don't have to do it as prescribed by the designer on the back. They don't care.
Right, right.
You know, just change it. Change it to what you like.
Yep.
But or the needle thing. That's the other one, you know, the exact needle.
Yeah.
You know, you need the certain needle. It's somewhere, you might be more comfortable with one, or you find one works better for you. My needles are generally in a big pile on a needle minder, and I feel them. And if they feel rough, then they go into the needle trash bin, and then I find a new one. But then I don't even know if they're the right size. I just feel them, and I say, oh, yeah, that seems right. Oh, and it's not pointy, so it's good for my cross stitch.
Right.
Or it is pointy, so it's good for my embroidery. That's how I do my needles.
It went right into my fingertip. Okay, that's an embroidery needle. Yep. But yeah, it's real easy if you've got a project that has 20 different colors and you have all but one. And it's real easy to just say, all right, that gets set aside till I can get that color. Mm-hmm. But you really don't have to.
No, you can just find a substitute. Find right. something else that works.
Yeah, break out right. Your DMC color chart. Everyone should have one with the threads, not the printed one. Mm-hmm. But or go into your stash. You know, if you don't have the DMC, if you have a Cosmo collection, there's probably one that'll come close, or an Anchor, or
an overdyed. You know, if you only need and some of them, it turns out you only need a couple of stitches of a color. So do you really need that color?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm looking at a sampler that I'm getting ready to stitch. Actually, it's Ann Ferguson by Kathy Andrews. I've looked at it a couple of times. And I keep stopping because it's like, oh, it's in a Varissois. It's in a Varissois, which is beautiful thread.
Yeah.
But I don't want to. I don't think I have a Varissois in my stash. I have other things in my stash. And it's like, okay, so Beth, why don't you just pull some fabric, take right. the color chart, and go? Because right. the little girl doesn't care. Kathy no. Andrews doesn't care.
No.
And I really love that sampler.
Yeah.
And because it's beautiful, it's got fun stitches on it. And I think, yeah, Jennifer, I am thinking about starting another project if you're listening. you know, but it's one of those things. It does stop us sometimes. And it's like, yeah. okay, so I've got to find the fabric. And, you know, she suggests things, but why don't I just pull from my stash? Just pull what I already have. You know, I'm sure I have something in Vicky Clayton silks, or I have some Needlepoint Ink silks. Between them, I should have enough threads.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
In the inventory, yeah. To do it. And I could add, I don't need to do all silk. It could be cottons. It could be the yeah. TMC substitute.
Right. You know, and that's the thing. If you do it, if you change it up, people like Kathy are going to be excited to see what you do with it. It's not like they're right. going to be offended because they put together a design and you didn't match it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say 90% of the designers are excited to see what somebody does that's different from what they saw. And
right.
so go for it. Yep.
Right, right.
Yeah.
In fact, she even I'm thinking, I think that's the other thing is I'd like to do it on a really tiny count. Mm-hmm. As small of a count as I can get, because it is on tiny count, the original is.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, 52, 63, how crazy can we get?
Yeah. This was so good. This was just so good. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, even, there's, oh, it's not exactly the right color. It's not, well, just work with it. Just go for it. Yeah. You know, it might work out. It might work out anyway.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. And the one that got me was, is that it's time to stop adding to your stash. And I was like,
oops.
I think, oops. Because it's easy to say, oh, well, you know, maybe I just need that one more color. You know, if I just had that, then I could use it. Oh, right. And, you know, and then threads never go by themselves and charts never travel alone. And
right. Right.
And then you have inventory.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Okay, I need this. I can't do this until I have this thread that involves 20 stitches on a 14 by 18 piece of needlework. And so, yeah, so you go buy that, and then now you've got more stash for
right.
those stitches. And there's a good chance some other color in your stash would do the job, or it may even make it better.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, you know, ooh.
Ooh, ooh. Ooh. Right, right, you know? Right.
Yeah.
And that's, and I'm getting ready to start Gail Safford's Bargello EGA group correspondence course. And I realized I was going to change it to some certain colors. And so I looked through my neon rays, my frosty rays, and I didn't have the color range I thought I did. I thought, now maybe those colors are somewhere else and have not been put away, which is very possible.
That's a topic for another show.
Yes, totally another show. But so I stopped and I said, okay, you may not order more neon rays, frosty rays, whatever colors you need, because you've got something here that'll work for this piece.
Ooh, self-discipline. Look at you.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. So it, I just needed to, and I know I'm going to just paint my background canvas. I'm not going to buy canvas because I have canvas and I can put a color wash on easy enough.
Right.
But it was hard because my urge was to send a note to Kathy Ray and say, Kathy, these are the DMC colors I want to use. Do you have anything in these threads? You know, or what do you have that would in DMC that matches this DMC color in your thread line that'll work for Bargello that I can use?
Yep.
Which is very dangerous to send to Kathy because she has
she has quite
the inventory. Yes. And she has fabulous threads, and it would be fun to use. Mm-hmm. But I need to use some of the stuff I have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all right, so let me take you to the other side of that. Okay. I mean, we talk about you and your stash, your inventory, but as I look around this room, I'm sure that I'm a good distance behind you, but still, this is ridiculous. But then, all right, so then to the other side of that, when you go into a needlework store and you just pick up, you have absolutely no use for them, no plans for them, but you pick up threads because you like the color, or this is a thread line you don't have, so you'll pick up half dozen colors, say, I'll try them sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that adds to the stash, but if you, in fact, actually try them,
right,
instead of putting them in a drawer and forgetting about them, then, you know, that's, oh, I think that's good.
Yes. Yeah. And I was doing more of that where I was playing with more of my threads just to see what they did on fabric, you know, just stitching with them, doing embroidery stitches, doing something with them. And I enjoy that. That's fun to play with. Like doing that wool piece. The wool applique, the Wonderfill, the Wonderfill we got with the kit, that was beautiful to work with. And I did end up using almost all of one color because I was having so much fun making bullion knots and just playing with it. And I thought, okay, this was good. This was a good, now I know I like this thread. I like the variegation on it. It's a lot of fun to use. Yeah. And then seeing what Cindy and Robin did, where they did Hardanger with it.
I was like,
wow, that's a great idea.
But see, that's, you know, I think people in those instances, I think people look at that as wasting thread because it's not going into a project that's going to go into a frame and go on the wall. And no, because you're learning, you're experiencing, and you never know what that's going to lead to.
Right.
You know, and during the Tour de France thing, Jessica Grimm was just trying out different threads, making those needle minders. She had some threads that she wanted to try. And so she was making these little, inch and a half by inch and a half needle minders, trying different threads.
Right.
Now she's added to her mental database, these threads I like, this one I didn't care for. And so,
and I have a box of overdyed threads, and it's labeled overdyed silk and floss. And I was thinking, this Everyday Folk and Folk has some great motifs in the back. Pull one of these motifs, and maybe even just one motif that I want to see, and stitch it over and over again in different threads, and see what how the variegation looks, and that way you have something repeatable. Yeah. It'd be repeatable. You'd say, okay, well, that's how this stitch is. I don't really like how that variegates on cross stitch, but maybe it'd look great for an embroidery, or maybe it'd look great for, if I did something else, if I pooled it or whatever.
See that. And that's the thing. And in that Avlia book, her drawstring bags, she has that one that's long, narrow one where you can take one of those borders. Like, okay, you're going to make gifts. You've got a small party for half dozen people coming up, and you want a nice gift, you could take those borders from that book and those bags and different threads. You could learn something and end up with a gift that is really nice for each of your guests.
Right. And using your stash, using your stash from things you already have. Yep. And I've got to look at her finishing on that, those bags. Does that look like a fun idea to have those little.
Right.
Because if you've ever made bag, those are, it's like, okay, how do you finish these better? So yeah, I'm looking forward to looking at that. But yeah, you're right. You're right. And just, you know, use some scraps of fabric. And again, that's the other thing. I have a linen collection now, you know, mm-hmm. that I go and it's like, oh, this color looks nice. Well, now I have all these fabrics and I'm like, now what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's use some of them. Well, let's try. I have some really pretty, like, I think there's a mulberry color, and there's a blue one I have, kind of bluish purple, from Fox and Rabbit. Hmm. And I petted those the other day. I went and I looked at them and I was like, oh, look at these nice fabrics. They're pretty. And I put them back in their box. But wouldn't that be fun to take one of those colors, see if I have an overdyed that would look good on top mm-hmm. of it and play and just play. Why not?
Yep. Sure.
Why not?
Sure.
Yeah. It's just time.
Right. But that's the, you know, that the Needleminder project that Jessica Grimm was doing has mm-hmm. stuck in my mind. One, because it's a great way to make a Needleminder, very easy, anybody can do it. But it's been, for me, what stuck in my mind is the way she is testing threads on a linen, seeing how they behave, seeing if she likes them. Because you know down the road, somebody like Jessica is going to then incorporate this thread in a bigger project because she liked the way it worked.
And I just had a brain.
Uh-oh.
Okay, you know, we bought from Clara, we bought the gold work supplies.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Why can't we do, you know, you're going to make a little circle with needlework on it. That's what the needle minders are. Do a little tiny motif of some sort with that gold work and try those gold work threads.
Sure. Yep. Because right now they're just sitting in a box.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And I might as well use them. Yep. I got to play with them sometime.
Yeah. Well, and isn't that the bigger question? What are we saving all this stuff for? Why did we buy all this stuff and what are we saving it for?
Right.
You know? Right.
Because we've talked about that.
Project, you know, that special project. Give me a break.
Yeah. And we might as well use it. And our kids aren't going to, kids are always already like, no.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's like, yeah, maybe Rachel will take some of the stuff if she's still stitching. But the boys won't. They don't care.
No.
And then it just passes, the sash just gets passed on to my guild, and you know, we're just recycling it through each other.
Yeah.
So yeah, use the stuff. And I think that's what I liked about what Krista was saying about her book too, is the things she makes them to be usable.
Yeah.
And use them. Use the stuff your grandma made. Yep. You know, put it out, enjoy it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we were talking this morning in the Tour de Broderie about buying linen pieces, stitched or fabric pieces from estate
mm-hmm.
sales. And, you know, that's just, and if it doesn't sell, it's going to get thrown away, but that's good quality linen. That's linen in a lot of instances, like you can't get today. I don't care how good a linen you buy today. You can't get like it was made 100 years ago or 50 years ago. And if it's in good shape, who says you can't take the threads out of it, wash it, and stitch on it?
Right. Or even I have friends that like the part that's stitched and then the stuff that isn't stitched. So they'll take it and use it in their art quilts. The stuff that isn't stitched, that stuff is great for doing surface embroidery on again.
Yeah.
It's even the cotton is a heavier, it's not the same as the quilting cotton we use, and it's not muslin, but it's definitely cotton. It's not linen.
Yeah.
And it has a nice feel to it. It's like, it's perfect for stitching on. Use right. it. Cut it and use it. Use it for your surface embroidery.
Yep.
Make something with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like it's going to deteriorate.
Eventually it will. And that's the thing. You know, eventually all that stuff, you get holes in it, moths, they eat it. It does, if you wash it a lot, it deteriorates. But like even I have something, like I think my grandmother used to put the tortillas on it. And I was helping my mom clean some stuff, and she's like, oh, this is patched, it's faded. It's like, I want it.
Yeah.
And I now use it, and I put my tortillas on it when I make tortillas. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of my grandmother.
Sure.
And it has a patch in it, and it's because she used it.
Yep.
But it's mine. It's mine.
Yep.
I'm using it, and I wash it. I just throw it in the wash with the other things. But anytime I use it, I think of her. And so... Yeah. But the same thing with our stash, I've been feeling that more. It's like, okay, I have all these threads. I have all these things. I need to use them in a project. Why not? Yeah. I can't save them for, there's not a better project.
Right. Right.
The one I'm working on now.
Quit buying stuff. Use what you have. There's so much, so much you can do and quit waiting for a day when you have more time. Because, you may not get
Project. We've got some fabulous projects in our stashes that it's like, why aren't we working on those?
I know. Yeah. Look at the list of stuff we've talked each other into. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. We're relearning things. I think that's something we've kind of, I think we both enjoy learning something new. I think it's more than just, I think that's why I've liked the Dawn to Dusk project. It's really stretched me. It's not more than just changing the colors. The stitches are a little complicated. Mm-hmm. It's got some trickiness to it. It's a good complicated project. We like learning. We like trying something a little different, stretching ourselves.
That's what it is for me. Yeah. Is learning a technique or learning how to use a different cloth or whatever it could be. That's where it really hits home for me. Yep. I'm with you 100%. Mm-hmm. Yep. Who were we talking to about cultural appropriation?
Krista,
that's right. Krista West. We were talking about cultural appropriation because we were talking about designs from Greece and from Europe in general.
Right.
That was such an interesting discussion because, people get all worked up over cultural appropriation in whatever it might be. But what in between the three of us, we were basically concluding, I think, that can I say that we were concluding that it really doesn't happen or can't happen or is a non-issue with needlework? Because can I go that far?
I think so. I think it's because we, as needleworkers share their patterns. They share their ideas with each other. So, I think of quilters, you had a pattern you liked and you'd share it with your neighbor and then it would spread across, the country. Needleworkers did the same thing for centuries. If you look at those samplers, there's motifs in them that are similar. They started out one way, like the carnation, that one carnation pattern that you see in borders, that you see everywhere. Krista was talking about it. It's in Greek folk embroidery and it's in Byzantine. It's everywhere. It's not cultural appropriation. It's just the traders passed it throughout the continent and across the world, it was just an idea that somebody liked. So,
and that was the thing. I think is the thing that we forget when people get all worked up about this is back in history with all the trade routes, where it would take, months to a year for a ship to get from point A to point B. and then somebody sees a design and then they start to stitch it. Because Krista was talking about how hard it is to tell where some of these patterns originated.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pinpoint it because it shows up in so many different places, and there is no way to tell who started it because you weren't there.
Right. And it's textile, so they don't last forever. So right. it might have started in Turkey, you know, or there and moved up to Europe, or might have started up in Europe and moved down, or moved across the Byzantine Empire, or right. across through China. And in fact, I just looked a little bit at Egyptian, ancient Egyptian pictorials, and there's the stylized lotus that if you change it just a little bit, it looks like flower borders on a sampler. Like it looks like exactly the same thing. And, you know, yeah, there was the whole Egyptian craze there for a while in Europe, but it keeps going through, you know, right. and some of the motifs are the same. They're repeated across cultures. But we like to share things. How can that be a cultural appropriation? Yeah. You know, right. I think of Yvette Stanton's, what she does with her white work, and she's basically saving some of those techniques from extinction. Yeah, we've done Hardanger for a while now here in the States and across Europe.
Yeah.
But her books have made those come alive. The Smoig book, I mean, what's the other one? The Sardinian knotwork, Montmelic, even though that's, those techniques, she's pretty much saved them by writing a book about it.
Right.
Now, she's not from those cultures.
No.
But she has a love for white work and a love for preserving it. And then we talked to somebody else who does tours. What's her name? Thredwritten.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And I can't. So she goes to different countries and there's just a little community that's still doing this type of needlework, and she goes and talks to them and sees their costumes. And that's not cultural appropriation. That's saving something that'll be lost if we don't keep it.
Right.
And she start stitching
it. In Romania, she was doing it. In Eastern Europe, she was doing several of those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when we were talking with Krista about this, and this was not on the air, not recorded, which some of these things we should record and some we shouldn't, but it was Yvette Stanton came to mind because Krista was telling about somebody in Greece, I think it was, showed her what was basically Hardanger.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought it was something else. And then she corrected them. No, that's from the fjords so that's Hardanger. But then immediately comes to mind is Yvette Stanton, because white work as a general term, but even if you look at all of those books that she's done, all the different techniques, if you factor in evolution and change and culture and all those things, they're all variations on a theme in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Just somehow, you know, cutting holes, pulling threads, whatever it is, all we have is white, you know?
Right, and right.
White on white and or cream on cream or whatever it is, but from all over the world. And so, that's not cultural. She's saving those. You're right. Like you said, she's saving them from disappearing into the ether, from being no more.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because, you know, some of those, you know, like we were saying, you know, young people aren't necessarily doing the same thing we are.
Right.
But eventually, wouldn't it be sad if nobody did Hardanger and that it was lost?
Yeah.
Or even some of the costuming that's made there that's so beautiful in those cultures that they were. And, you know, we were talking that we wanted to talk to somebody from South America. Those, and they have to have some sort of cult costuming. I can't remember the name of the anyway, that's not cultural appropriation to find out about that, to learn that culture and to learn how to do the stitches that they're making.
Right.
That's appreciation. That's cultural appreciation. You want to know.
Keeping it,
keeping it alive.
You know, look at Krista, you know, with her clothing embellishment thing all over Europe. You know, that's what needlework was done. Collars, cuffs, you name it. And it's the same thing. And then she's using patterns she got from Greece.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But now I had suggested that it seemed to me we could make one exception, and that would be Native Americans. But then you said no.
No, they're very similar to some Egyptian designs. If you look, that's the reason I looked up Egypt, because I was like, I remember being in a museum one time and thinking, that looks like Native American designs that I've seen somewhere else. And it's similar. They're not exactly the same, but they're similar because, you know, I think it's just how human beings work, how we draw things, how we make designs. They're different. They're definitely different. You might use, you know, slightly different lines or whatever, but they're very, very similar because we're all human beings. We all do the same things, basically.
Yeah, we all think of a scroll, or we all think of a zigzag up and down and around.
Or a diamond, you know, a diamond shape is very, very common design. You know, it's a nice design element. We stitch them, the flower base motif, you know, and then, of course, Native Americans, they were influenced by people coming on the trains and they wanted to sell things. You know, to make money. You know, so they adapted and took on European Western designs to sell.
Because it appealed to the customer.
So,
So I just don't see it. And people get their feathers all ruffled over the cultural appropriation thing. And I think there are definitely some instances in culture where it's an issue or could be an issue. I don't think so in needlework. Don't see it.
Because we're not trying to take someone's culture away from them. We're appreciating the culture that they have. And it's, like I wouldn't go and make myself a dress from a region in like a hard iron. I wouldn't because I don't have any reason to do so. But will I make something that's Hardanger that looks because I think it's beautiful. And I love it. There's a difference.
And that's the thing. You think, well, today, all right, that's theirs. You can't do that. Well, why not? Because 500 years ago, that's how it happened. That's how somebody got it, was somebody else showed them how, you know, and they were traveling and they saw it and they came back and you know, and it gets a variation and a different interpretation, but it's all.
You know, colors that are, that's one thing, like people in the Southwest tend to use really bright, vibrant colors. And then here in the Midwest, it's much more subdued and, muted colorways, and it always drove my mom bonkers. She's like, brighten it up here, brighten it up. It needs to be brighter. Can use brighter colors. And I'm like, no, it doesn't work. And you can always see when you're in the Southwest, a lot of times you can see where Midwesterners had moved in and they had their ranch style houses. And it was like, from.
And I've wondered about that. All right. You know, when you look in the Southwest, and our son and daughter-in-law used to live in Arizona, and so we were out there a lot. Everything is the sand-colored browns and whatever, houses and all of those things. And I wonder if it's because if you live in the desert, you see sand, green cactus. Most of the time it's green, but a lot of times it's not as green. you know, and if that's what your background is, then does that drive the brighter colors? Because now I have a palette, I have a background. What am I going to put against that that's going to stand out, catch my eye, and be pleasing? So then I go bright.
Right. I think so. I think of the bright, bright colors of R.C. Gorman's work. Who was the other artist that used to be out there? Georgia O'Keeffe. She used her colors again. And she was from, I think, from New York originally.
Yeah, she's not native. Not native out there, no.
No, but she definitely incorporated it. And I think the bright colors work out there, whereas here they kind of clash with what you – it just doesn't work as well. It doesn't. You're right.
Well, we have a different environment. I think that the background in the Midwest – in the Midwest, the background has more inherent color to it. So how do we work with that? Whatever the visual background is, where out there it is, it's very plain. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure somebody studied this, like take four regions of the country and then how do colors work? I'm sure somebody studied it, but I got to believe it's, you know, because you take, of course, Florida, I was going to say Florida, but Florida's got such a cultural mixture that that's probably a hard one to.
Well, what about like up north? Like the there's a art group that's up in New York that were painters, and their style is very distinctive. When you see it, it's like it's like rolling green hills, but it's the whole color palette is very much that same. Whereas when you see people who paint Western paintings, it's just a whole different vibe you get. Taos school, the Taos people. I know there's a whole group of people that moved to Taos, New Mexico, and did art. It's interesting. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
The environment shaping it. And people who, you know, it's, oh, I know. And it's people, Hawaii, people who moved to Hawaii, their color palette will change because they'll start with, you know, their, what they're used to from the mainland, which is, you know, maybe more muted, and then they get all of a sudden you get these very tropical colors moving into their art. Again, why? I mean, now talk about a place that's bright with color. Hawaii is.
Well, because the flora and fauna is colorful. You get in some of the rainforests where you get these bright colors. If you live near the ocean, near coral reefs, you know, a lot of bright colors you're going to run into. So, But I just can't, I can't see the cultural appropriation as an issue in needlework. Now somebody will argue with that, but I just don't see it.
And we tend to share as needle workers, we tend to like to share, going back to our wanting to share with people who walk into our homes want to share with them our love and our passion. So if we found somebody who loves to stitch and they're like, okay, Jessica Grimm, she's never used Vicki Clayton silks. I'm going to send her a spool because I can't wait to see what she thinks about that silk because she's got different silks to work with there than we do. And I want to know what she thinks about it. So, you know, we want to share those things. We want to share what we have. We want, it's just our nature, you know.
And that stupid tax they have to deal with wrecks the fun.
I know. I'm just like, fun. I'm hoping it'll go through customs. That's my, you know, everyone say a prayer over my package that it goes through customs as a gift.
Because it's so unfair because people in Europe talk about how we just live in this land of overflowing threads and cloth and blah, 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 blah. And they don't have shops. They can't necessarily get that stuff. And I just want to put a whole bunch of stuff in a box and send it to Jessica. but you're imposing a tax on her end that is ridiculous.
Right.
And so to send her a gift is not sending her a gift, it's sending her a penalty.
Right.
You know, a financial penalty. And it's just, ugh.
I made that mistake one time. A gal who runs a blog, who does a lot of stitch alongs, and I participate a lot. I sent her a package, not realizing she had to do the VAT tax. And it was a tax. It was a burden. It was horrible. I felt horrible about it after I was done. I was like, oh, why did I do that? You know,
we don't think of it.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But
no.
Look what it does to cultural sharing.
Mm-hmm.
It stops it cold.
Right.
Yeah. Because now you're going to send a couple of those dinky little spools of Vicki Clayton silk and hope it goes through without slapping a tax on it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
She should be able to get as many spools as she wants whenever she wants without mm-hmm. paying a big penalty. It's just...
No. Or shops should be able. That's the other thing. It's not like, you know, I wonder if that's the problem why they don't have shops is that, you know, the penalty for them to get the stuff in is, you know, you just can't afford to do it.
Right. Yeah. Too expensive. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And then they can't even get stuff from England now because they're not part of the European Union. So now they can't even do that. It's just
right. And it's funny when she said that the like a lot of the fabric is milled there.
Yeah.
It's just mind blowing to me.
Oh, so irritating, you know.
Yeah.
Because we could share. Look what we could share if we could just
right, and they could share with us. It's that the banding from Europe. I did send a little note to Kim asking for some that I didn't purchase while I was there. I was like, I can get more of the Black Swan. I can get Black Swan, but the banding is special. That stuff is just nice.
Well, and we have that because Kim hauls it back in suitcases.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just not made here. We don't have any mills to make that stuff.
Right.
Oh, and the calico too, that we discussed too with Jessica.
That's right. We were talking about that. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it is different. It's different than what we can get here.
Yeah. Yeah. Much different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the point where it'd be really nice to have some of that a couple yards.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Right.
We're not going to solve those problems.
No, not tonight.
Nope. So we're going to stop.
No. Okay.
We're just going to stop. That's the way it's going to be. And back on Sunday. Join us 10:30 Eastern every morning through Sunday for the Tour de Broderie Femme, women's Tour de France racing. And if the racing's done, like I said, we'll be on anyway. We don't care.
We'll be talking. We'll be talking and stitching.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.